public testimony, and we're going to open with a public hearing on House Bill 3481. So, Matt, you want to get the sheet and then tell us about it?
Good morning.
Good morning. Again.
How are you? Okay. Can you show this? You can always delay that.
I'm going to go ahead and let's see. Representative Leonard, did you want to go ahead and come forward?
Sure.
And Representative Witt, are you here for this bill as well?
I am.
Okay. Would you like to go ahead and come forward at this time as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Randy Leonard. I'm a state representative from Southeast Portland. Representative Witt and I have introduced House Bill 3481 at the request of Mother Francine, who's to my left, who will make some remarks here in a moment. And this regards an issue that's actually not as complicated as some might try to make it to be. Mother Francine contacted me some time back to explain that actually it's been almost 2 years ago, 18 months to 2 years ago now, that the community that they live in, Bridal Veil, Oregon, which is part of the Cascade Locks Municipal Electrical District, had their rates increased substantially more than the folks that actually live in Cascade Locks, though it's the same municipal electrical distribution system. She felt that the increases were extremely unfair and that they had no opportunity to, one, appeal the decision, or two, even vote for the folks that sit on the municipal electrical board, which is, by the way, the exact same folks that are the mayor and the city council. They do, as most communities do that have that kind of a system, hit the gavel, and they're the city council, and then when they're done with that business, hit the gavel again and become the municipal electrical board. And what happened was that the city of Cascade Locks, or the municipal district, determined that the cost of providing electricity to the area was rapidly increasing to such an extent that they went out and they hired a consultant. And I've provided to each of you a one-page document that is, in fact, the consultant's recommendations for addressing the issue of increased cost of electricity. And the consultant gave 8 recommendations for addressing those increased costs, and they picked recommendation number 8. Now, it just so happens that recommendation number 8 is the one recommendation that was the harshest on the people that lived outside of the city limits of Cascade Locks, and was the least harsh on the people that lived within the city of Cascade Locks. So that now Mother Francine and the order that she is with in Bridal Veil pay 28% more than the folks that live in Cascade Locks. There's about 125 electricity customers in South Banks, what is the area referred to as South Bank, which is the area outside of the city of Cascade Locks. The issue before the legislature is this, and I think this is a good example of when the Oregon legislature needs to step in. In researching this issue and calling the PUC, I first learned that the PUC does not regulate municipal utility districts. But upon inquiry, I learned that there was no other example in the state of companies that the PUC did regulate where electrical rates differed for different residential rates within one utility. In other words, if there was an electrical rate increase, everybody paid the same increase, no matter which part of an electrical area at higher cost. All the residents pay the same increase. Second, I learned that municipal utility districts are an entity unto themselves. There is no appeal beyond that. That the only, what I was told by the PUC, the only connection you have with actions they take is the folks that get the electricity provided to them have the opportunity to vote for the board members. Except in this case, these folks can't even vote for the people that charge them the electric rates. So, for that reason, I introduced the bill that you are considering today, Mr. Chair, that's really fairly simple. It says if a rate increase occurs in a municipal utility district, then the rate increase will be the same for all electrical customers. And not as in this case, I have come to the conclusion an unfair rate increase shifted to folks who can't vote for the people that caused the rate increase, and a minimal rate increase for those that do vote for the people that caused the rate increase. At a time of unfair increases, or I shouldn't say unfair, maybe unprecedented increases in electrical rates that we'll probably be seeing this summer and beyond, I think this legislation is very important to ensure that Oregon residents are treated fairly by municipal utility districts and increased costs aren't unfairly shifted to those residents who are disenfranchised from even deciding who it is that causes those rate increases. And with that, Representative Wood.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just add to what Representative Leonard has said that electricity obviously is a fundamental need in today's society. And to have a process whereby a city government, which also controls the provision of electricity to a customer base, can discriminate in price by charging a higher price to folks that are outside of that city limits, and we have no ability to elect or not elect people that are making these decisions, seems to me to be fundamentally unfair. And in view of the fact that this is a fundamental need in modern society, electricity, I think it's important that we have policies that don't allow this kind of shifting of cost or discrimination against those who have no say in terms of those who make the decisions, the election of those who make the decisions. So for those reasons, I think House Bill 3041 is good policy and promotes fairness, and I support it.
Another Francine? Go ahead, and then after you're done, we'll allow
you. Thank you very much for this opportunity to share a bit from our perspective of those of us who live in the South Bank. I'm not going to say very much.
Before you get started, though, Mother Francine, I need you to state your name for the record.
I'm sorry. Thank Mother you. Francine Cardew, a resident at Bridalveil, 25-year resident at Bridalveil, actually. One issue that I believe I will try to leave with you, and that is I just want to look into the conscience of each of us, not just you, but myself and each of us here, is that we're looking at not so much statistics or finances as we are looking at fairness. And I appreciate what the representatives have said, that it's difficult to be a minority. First of all, I'm a woman. Secondly, I'm a religious. Thirdly, I live in a district where I cannot vote. I can't exercise my democratic right to vote for issues that touch our personal life and our personal needs. And so I would really like you to consider this bill, have an opportunity to represent your work as a group of people who are like us, who want fairness across the board for all of our citizens in Oregon. And I thank you for this opportunity, and I thank the two senators for bringing this to a point where we can discuss it.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Representative Worth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess either representative or are you Mother Superior or are you?
That's what I am.
I just have a cool side. Now, is this typical for municipal utility districts to have a service boundary outside the representation area of their board? Is it, and I don't know what the service district of this municipal utility district is. Is it the county or is it?
If I could, Mr. Chair and Representative Worth, I did quite a bit of research at the time I was originally contacted on this, and what I determined was that, no, it isn't unusual for the boundaries to be different than there are municipal utility districts, there are public utility districts, and there are private utilities, and each have their own set of regulations. And in this instance, we're dealing with a municipal utility district that typically is just run by a municipality within its boundaries. But there apparently are examples of municipalities that provide electrical service outside of their boundaries, such as South Bank. But in the research that I conducted at the time, there was no examples of different rates for different residential customers, either in municipal utility districts, public utility districts, or private utilities.
What is the service district, or what is the boundary of the service area that this municipal utility district serves?
Cascade Locks south, or I should say west, to include the area they call South Bank, most of us would think of as Bridalveil, into Multnomah County.
Is that one county, or does it cross county?
Crosses counties.
County lines, so it follows no...
Hood River County, and it's a municipal utility district, really isn't bound by county lines, and they've provided service out there to South Bank for how long, I'm not sure. I'm sure we'll hear from the city council.
The final follow-up?
Follow-up?
Have you investigated possibly appointing a different board, such as a board that was, you know, maybe representative or, you know, serving or one person from each of these areas so that your grievance procedure isn't two people who you can't even elect or...
Right.
A vote on.
Well, again, Mr. Chair and Representative Worth, in researching the issue, municipal districts are, utility districts are a creature of statute. They're found within the statute. So any changes in membership or how they operate have to be done in state statute. So your suggestion, I suppose, is one way to look at it. My way of looking at it was to think, good public policy ought to be what the rest of the state does when we have electrical rate increases. For example, some of the folks that are served by PGE live in East Multnomah County. It costs a lot more money to deliver electricity to East Multnomah County because of the wind and downlines, which you're going to hear about from Cascade Lock with respect to the folks in Bridalveil, than it does for me on Southeast 153rd. But when PGE proposes a rate increase, they don't say, well, East Multnomah County should pay 28% more than Randy Leonard does because East Multnomah County is farther away from our generating area and our lines go down more out there. The rate increases are averaged out for everybody that lives under PGE. We all pay the same rate increase. And so this was really, for me, a very straightforward, a simplistic way of addressing what I consider to be a fundamentally unfair policy by the Cascade City Council. Cascade Locks.
Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not familiar in terms of how far out are you from Cascade Locks? Are you like just across city line, or are you distance?
We are some distance. We're close to Normal Falls. So I don't know how many miles that is.
I'm
15, 20.
It's about between 15 and 20 miles.
So, in terms of do you know how many people are served on that line, or are they delivering electricity specifically to you?
No,
or are there a neighborhood, and they're just so everybody outside the city limits is going forward is paying the same rate.
About 125 customers.
Mm-hmm. Is that it? Are you done? Okay. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I can add just two points. Number one, with the pressure on BPA prices, it's likely that these municipal utilities are going to see some significant increases in costs in the coming months. If this bill doesn't pass, it provides an opportunity for these municipals to hold down the costs in those areas, the service area, where people will actually vote for the city council or the board members that are making these decisions and pass on those costs to those who don't have any say in terms of how these folks who are elected and how these decisions are made. And I think that becomes a risk going forward. And I think the second point is that government in the United States way back in the early 1900s made the decision that electricity needs to be made available to all at affordable prices on a non-discriminatory basis. And because of that, for the last 100 years, we have provided electricity to rural areas of the United States at a very much a subsidized price to urban areas. So we've recognized the principle that electricity is fundamental, it's an essential need for modern society, and that it's inappropriate to discriminate in the way you set those prices, even if someone is further away from a line and might be a little bit more expensive to service. I mean, that's been a fundamental policy that I think has been recognized for at least 100 years now.
Thank you. I have a question for you. Oh, did you have a question, Representative Gerard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious as to whether or not, and Bill or Randy can answer this, is this a standard practice among municipal utilities to charge different rates?
If I could address that, Mr. Chair and Representative Gerard, when this issue first came to my attention, I did some research, and at the time that I did that research, which was probably at least 18 months ago, so I'm not saying I can't give you an answer as of what the practices are today, but when I spent the time bringing myself up to speed on this issue 18 months ago, the city of Cascade Locks was the only, not only municipal utility district, but including public utility districts and private utilities in the state of Oregon that charged different rates to residential customers within their service delivery area.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Worth?
I guess I'm looking at a wider scope here because, the discrepancy in rates that are being charged seems to be one possible grievance. You know, there's a number of things that might come up at some point where I can see that people who are not within the city limits, therefore their grievance procedure, their appeals process is to a board that they're not, you know, they have no responsibility to elect or vice versa. So I'm just wondering, is there anything that we can do in statute that prohibits that, or that the boards for these utility districts, and I know it's similar for transit districts and throughout the state, be representative of the service area that they provide service to, because at some point there's going to be a grievance or appeals process or appeals on some other point besides this, I would imagine.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, Representative Worth, I think there's obviously a number of ways in which you can approach this. I think the approach taken by this bill is an appropriate one, and it just lays down the fundamental policy that you can't charge different rates when your service area expands outside of the city simply because of the fact that it's outside of the city. Even if this area of the territory, the folks could vote for the city council, which they can't because it's part of the city. Because as I understand, the city council makes the decision here relative to the policies relative to electricity. It seems to me that you can't very well say that they can vote for them on issues relative to electricity distribution, but they can't vote for them on all the other issues. So I don't see any way out of this conundrum other than passing legislation that says you can't discriminate on the basis of being in or outside of the city. If that's responsive to your question, I think.
Can I respond to that? And that's not what I was saying. I was, you can't make them, be able to vote for the city councils. What I was concerned about is then the city council is only, responsible to people within the city limits. So why are they the board for this municipal utility district? Why not that board for the municipal utility district be representative of the entire service area?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a good question. I think what has happened here is that these territories for some of these municipal utilities and for some of the PUDs, geographically have expanded over time so that you have service provided all around the state. And I guess you could take the approach that you would have to have a separate election, have separate decision makers relative to a municipal utility's decisions. I think that's a much, much bigger change, though, than what we're asking for here, because in many cases it would require the setting up of new entities around the state specifically to deal with issues relative to a municipal utilities board. And instead of having just an election for your city council, you have an election for a whole different group of people, you know, specifically to deal with those issues. But it seems to me that's a reasonable approach, but a much, much bigger change than I think when this bill is proposing. And I suspect the people that would oppose this bill would strongly oppose that kind of bill.
And if I could add just one thing, just to be sure about, Mr. Chair, the bill and this issue. Were we dealing with a situation where the folks in Bridalville had been charged a different rate as they were, but they were represented on the board that made the change, I would have said to Mother Francine at the time, I'm sympathetic with your cause. You need to elect a stronger voice to represent you when those things come down. So I don't want to at all suggest that that somehow the state is somehow stepping in to a local control issue, because I see this as a classic example of what state government is about. When inequities occur throughout the state and it's difficult for the local folks to sort them out, that's our job, I believe, to step in and set some statewide policy, especially when these municipal utility districts are a creature of state. I mean, we created them in the first place. I think there is absolutely nothing inappropriate about us going in and then tweaking, if you will, the law to make sure that citizens are treated fairly.
Representative Smith and then Representative.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if this is a question or I just want to make a comment to clarify for the committee, since this is my district and I live not too far from there. Part of the history of this is that there used to be hundreds of people that lived in that area. And PGE has refused to serve that area. So the service has to come from the city of Cascade Locks. So whether there's something that needs to be done, it's a very unique situation, and it does cost more to service those because we've lost subscribers. And I think we'll hear testimony from the city of Cascade Locks that might clear up how this is happening, how they'll address it. So it's not really a question, it's a comment. I'm very sympathetic, but the history of Bridalville, and it's unique because it's in the National Scenic Area, and we have lost many, many parcels of land that were served that are now state-owned or private, you know, public-owned, that have created this situation. So I'm sure the cost is borne by them. So I don't know if that clarifies it.
Well, if I could just add something to that, as Representative Smith said, Mr. Chair, PG, and I confirm this, and just so you know, I started working on this before you were elected. I contacted PGE, as a matter of fact, and determined where the end of their line was up on the hill in Corbett, and asked them what would be involved in getting them to drop basically a line down the side of the hill and provide electricity for the folks in the South Bank, because then they would have the opportunity to, if they objected to a proposed rate increase, go to the PUC, right, as you and I have the opportunity to do, and state their case, as is provided in the law. And they said, no way, no how. Right. They weren't interested. So you're right.
Follow up, Representative.
Just real quick to that point, Representative Ryan. Thank you, Chair. You said we pay the same rates on PG and Corbett. What you need to know is that we are at the low on priority for service. So you get more service in Portland. We are always the last to have the repairs and et cetera. So there's inequities in all of these.
True, but both you and I have the right to call the PUC and make a complaint about that. And those are followed up, and
thanks,
that's provided in statute,
right,
whereas the folks in Bridalville do not.
Right.
Okay. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith answered some of my question, but if this bill was to pass and the utility district extended their lines beyond their boundaries to service a customer at the customer's request, would they be able to recover their costs in the additional rate that they may charge, whether it be electrical service or water service or whatever the district provided?
If I could respond to that, there are different rates for hooking up and providing service than there are the actual kilowatt per hour rate. So that this bill does not regulate hookup charges or extending a line. It regulates the cost of electricity. It doesn't speak to water issues nor sewer issues. nor telephone issues. It speaks simply to the cost of providing the electricity per kilowatt hour.
Follow up. Then, if the customer wanted to amortize their cost through the rate that they paid, they wouldn't be allowed to do that.
I don't believe that's accurate, Representative Brown. I believe that the utility has the opportunity to charge whatever they charge for hookup fee. But the rate again, and I would remind you that the rate, there is no other example in the state where different rates are charged for residential customers in one part of a service area versus another. So that's fairly standard practice throughout the state in whatever kind of utility service district you live in. But your specific question about hooking up, they do have the opportunity to charge different hookup rates, and I think they do that as well.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. We need to go ahead and move this along. I'm going to ask Tom O'Connor and Bob Wilby to go ahead and come on up together, please. Just make sure you state your name for the record and go ahead and begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is, for the record, is Tom O'Connor. I'm with Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities, and with me is Bob Willoughby, the City Administrator for Cascade Locks. What I'd like to do is give you a little bit of background about the specific situation in Cascade Locks, and also about municipal utilities in general, and then Bob will follow up with some specific discussion of what of why the City Council has taken the action that they've taken. Mr. Chair, Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities represents the 10 small and medium-sized municipal utilities in Oregon. We oppose House Bill 3481 because it is an unnecessary intrusion of preemption of local authority. Cascade Locks charges a higher distribution rate in the South Bank area, not because they're outside the city limits, but because it costs more to maintain that area. Further, the bill would restrict municipal utilities from operating in the new competitive environment. Municipal utilities provide not-for-profit service at cost to our communities. We operate under open meetings laws, the Public Records Act, and local budget law. We're governed, and the setting of rates and utility service policies are done by local city councils or utility boards. To correct some of the previous testimony, most municipal utilities serve their cities and then some small areas outside the actual city limits. We are not people's utility districts that serve counties as a large group. We are generally serve the city limits or maybe into the urban growth boundary in some small area outside the city limits. Most of that has arisen from historical circumstances when people asked to be served and there was no one else there. The two cities of Bandon and Cascade Locks, however, serve significant geographic areas outside the city, but with very little population. In these two cases, a higher distribution rate is charged to cover the larger costs to maintain the system in a rural, less dense area. And let me back up for just a minute. The utility bill that you all get, and tell me if I'm repeating stuff you already know, but it's important here. The utility bill that you get is made up of several parts. One is the so-called energy component, the electrons, the generation component of the bill. Associated generally with that is usually transmission, the long-distance lines to move the power. The other portion of your bill is what's called the distribution costs, and that's the cost to maintain the poles and wires of the system that get the power to your house or your business. And that includes the O&M for that, bucket trucks, the personnel, the billing, and all those kinds of things. the distinction is important because in the case of both Bandon and Cascade Locks, the energy charge component of the bill is the same. There is no difference whether you are in South Bank, in the case of Cascade Locks, or inside the city limits. The energy component of the bill, which is supplied by Bonneville Power Administration, is the same. The difference in rates in the case of Cascade Locks and Bandon comes in the distribution cost. And it's simply reflective of the fact that there is a higher cost to serve those rural areas outside the community. We do provide not-for-profit service, and we must recover all our costs through rates. There are no stockholders. Just as a little background, Cascade Locks was formed as a municipal utility in the 1930s. It, along with the City of Drane, is one of the two smallest utilities in Oregon. Again, this is not a countywide kind of, this is a little municipal utility with 500 meters approximately, about 1,200 population.
About 1,200.
City of Drane is a similar size. In the 1950s, the city began to operate the South Bank electrical system down the Columbia River Gorge in a narrow strip between the Eagle Creek Fish Hatchery and Bridal Veil. South Bank, again, it's important to understand, is a totally separate system from the city. It's served through a different substation direct from Bonneville Dam. It has high maintenance costs because of its location in the gorge, and there are so few people per mile of line. As Representative Smith mentioned, in the mid-1980s, this South Bank system lost over 60% of its load. 60% of its load went away. The Bonneville Fish Hatchery switched to direct service from the Bonneville Dam, Corps of Engineers. The Gorge Scenic Act was passed. The mill in the area moved, and no new residents, of course, can be significantly improved, or no new residents can come into the area because of the Scenic Act. The Scenic Act also restricts the kind of, it makes it more difficult because of the wetlands areas and so on to maintain and do the kinds of brush clearing you need to do. South Bank is responsible for 50 to 60% of the two systems' maintenance costs and makes up only 16% of the load. Bob will talk about the decision in the 1990s when it became clear that Cascade Locks could no longer wholly subsidize the South Bank area. And he'll also talk about that the city has not been passive in terms of this situation. They have attempted to respond positively. As he will tell you, they have created a special utility advisory board made up of citizens that serves as part of the budget process. That advisory board has a member of the South Bank area that's been appointed to it to make recommendations to the City Council on utility matters, an attempt to reach out and make sure that there were people involved in the setting of rates and service. The city also is trying to address the long-term problem. Even though this area is not a part of the city, they are working with Senator Wyden and Congressman Walden's offices in an attempt to get a federal grant through the Gorge Scenic Act to underground this 18-mile stretch of line through the scenic area, and by that way hoping to reduce the maintenance costs of the system in the long term. Beyond the unique Cascade Lock situation that Bob will talk a little bit more about, this bill would place a rate restriction on all municipal utilities that is totally incompatible with the new competitive industry world. Under this bill, municipal utilities selling power either at wholesale or under retail access to other areas on the West Coast could not compete in the market because their sales price would be artificially restricted by this language. So the new world that Representative Witt has been talking about in terms of utility structure, the municipal utilities would be the only group that would face this kind of restriction on them. And finally, this bill is, we feel, an unnecessary preemption of local authority. It asked the legislature to step in and overturn the legitimate and responsible decisions of local officials who have attempted to address the unique needs of this area in a positive way. We would urge you to let this bill remain in committee and not act on it further. Thank you.
My name is Bob Willoughby. I'm the city administrator in Cascade Locks. And before I talk about why the South Bend rates are higher, I wanted to clear up a couple of misconceptions from the earlier testimony. It was characterized, as I heard it, as a situation where people on the same distribution system were being charged higher rates because they couldn't vote and because they were not residents of the city. In fact, it is a completely separate distribution system. It could be operated separately. It receives all of its power from a different substation, and there is no way that we can intermingle the electrons between the city system and the South Bank system. We have two distinct and separate systems that historically have always been separate as far as how they were accounted for, how they were budgeted. The problem we've always had is that that South Bank system, especially since the problems that Tom talked about, cannot pay for itself. It was perennially in the black, and when we started losing the load in the earlier, in the time frame that Tom talked about, it became a bankrupt system. And we have, in fact, tried several times to have BPA take over the system. They are not interested because it cannot be served cost effectively. We have talked to the residents there about forming their own association, electing their board of governors, and running their own utilities, setting their own rates, but they are not interested in doing that because they know their cost would go up from what we are charging them now. So it's not the same distribution system, and it's not an attempt to pass on the cost to some people that don't have the political ability to affect those rates. Also, the only reason we are providing electricity outside of our city is the same reason we are the cable operator in Cascade Locks, and that's because we are remote, we're isolated, and no one else in the private sector would do that. So if we wanted cable TV, if the people in South Bank, which includes Multnomah Falls, the Bridalville area, Warrendale and Dotson, if they wanted electricity, it had to come from the city of Cascade Locks. The city stepped up and provided that electricity, but it's not because we are wanting to expand an empire. We would like nothing better than to have somebody take that system over. And so I wanted to clear up that misconception. I'd like to explain briefly why South Bank rates are higher. In August of 1999, there was a rate study done by the city. As a part of that rate study, they did a cost of service analysis. And I believe you got some written material from Tom that includes a letter from the person at Economic and Engineering Services in Portland that did this cost-based study for us. And as far as the cost study, he says in this letter that you have the copy of, that the results of our analysis showed that the South Bank customers had a higher cost of service than those customers not served in the South Bank system. These additional costs were brought about by two main factors, pre-trimming and keeping that distribution line in service was the first item, and the second was line losses. Because of this is a long 18-mile corridor with a single line stretched that entire distance, the line losses are much higher on that kind of distribution system, and therefore, even though we charge the same rate for power to the South Bank system, the cost of buying the power and actually delivering it to Bridalville at the end of the line is much higher for this than it is for the city system. Based upon that cost of service study, which showed that the city system was subsidizing the South Bank system, the city council made several decisions. First, the consultant's recommendation was, if you want to base the rates in South Bank on what it actually cost you to deliver the power, you would increase rates 10% in 1999, and then 1% for each of the next 2 years for a total of about 12.5%. In fact, the page that Representative Leonard showed you was not from the consultant. It was actually something that the city council considered, the eight options they considered to try and implement the consultant's recommendation. And they chose an option rather than simply increasing those rates 10.5% in the first year. They made the decision to spread those costs out over 3 years to try and soften the blow on the South Bank customers. The rate study also interestingly showed that based upon the cost of service study, the rates in the city of Cascade Locks should have been reduced in 1999. The city council made the decision not to reduce the rates in the city, but kept them higher than they should have been. And they also made the decision that the only cost that they were going to pass on to the South Bank residents were the cost of service. The city system, even with these increased rates, still subsidizes the South Bank system as far as administration. That's my salary, and our city light department's costs are not spread over South Bank. They're paid almost entirely by the city residents still. When we replace equipment, we're not capturing any part of that equipment cost from the South Bank customers because we know that there's a small customer base, and we know that it's a system that can't afford it. It's still essentially bankrupt. So the city, even with these rates, continues to subsidize the South Bank system. And that's why I was saying before, if they wanted to take over this system and elect their representatives and buy their power from Bonneville directly, their rates would be higher than they are now. So this is not a situation where a political entity was trying to pass on costs to people that couldn't react to that. But just to address that problem briefly, or that question that's been raised, what is the city doing to solve the problem? There are several things that we are attempting to do to bring those rates down as low as possible. We got a grant from the Forest Service to do a feasibility study for undergrounding the entire 18 miles of this distribution system. It's an extremely expensive process. It will cost between $4 and $5 million, and there's no way that the South Bank residents would be able to do that with their 157 meters that are out there. So we know that if and when that's done, the city will subsidize that as well, or the city system will subsidize that as well. But we know that's the only way, given the declining customer load, that we can ever reduce our operating costs. We think it's consistent with the Scenic Gorge Act and the desire to reduce some of the urban kinds of uses like that. And so we're hopeful that that the federal government will assist us in funding getting that undergrounded. Once that happens, then those rates will significantly be reduced. I have submitted an appropriations request to Senator Smith's office for some of the funding for doing that. We intend to pursue grant requests and get the 18 miles of distribution line undergrounded as quickly as we can. But when you have a city as small as Cascade Locks, a $4 million project for distribution like this is an extremely significant project for us to consider. But we are trying to be proactive and deal with the situation. The other thing that the city council did was to form a citizens utility advisory committee as a part of trying to decide how to deal with very significant BPA rates that municipal utilities, and I think all utilities in the Northwest, are going to be facing. And there are five members on that utility advisory committee. One of those lives in the South Bank area. That's 20% of the committee. They represent 16% of our load. So by that calculation, I think that they are fairly represented on this committee that will make recommendations to the city council on any rate increases in the future. And in fact, as a part of their deliberations, they reaffirmed the 1999 rate increases. And this was by a unanimous decision, and the South Bank representative was there at the time. They reaffirmed as their base rate, to which we would add the BPA rates, this rate increase that's been characterized as discriminatory and unfair. Actually, it's a cost-based rate that, when it was analyzed by this committee, was determined to be the appropriate base to start from to add the BPA costs increase. And the final point that I would like to make is that you need to understand Cascade Locks as a community and understand its ability or lack of ability, actually, to subsidize any other operation like this separate system. City of Cascade Locks is a distressed communities on the distressed communities list. We have more than half of our population low to moderate income. I think all of our businesses in our downtown, and the number of those businesses has been declining as mills closed and aluminum plants closed in the area. Almost all or essentially all of our businesses downtown are for sale. That's a very seasonal economy. In the summer, we have visitors there, but if you go there in the winter, you can easily find a parking place anywhere you want to park, and you won't have any wait in any of the restaurants. And we are also an enterprise zone, which the state legislature created to assist rural communities that need special assistance with their economy. So the point I wanted to make is this is not a community that the legislature needs to put an additional burden on that is not discriminatory, but but it's a rate that was based upon our actual cost of providing a service that we didn't ask to provide in the first place. And I think it would be extremely unfair. It's a bankrupt system. We're not a community that can afford to do this, so please do not put that burden on our residents. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Willoughby. Representative Gerard, before you ask your question, I would remind you, committee, that this is only scheduled for public hearing today.
Yeah, just one quick question. Are you mandated to supply electricity to Bridal Veil?
We haven't looked at that question. There are obligations. We haven't really looked at that question. I don't know what would happen if we turned off that separate system. We could certainly do that. Multnomah Falls would, and their new sewer system would be out of electricity. I really don't know the answer. We're trying to avoid even looking at that question. We want to try and find a way to get that ground, that line undergrounded so that we can reduce our costs to the point where we can continue to provide the service, because, frankly, there's really no alternative other than that area forming its own utility district and taking over that operation themselves.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Representative Tomei.
Thank you. To follow up on that statement of Joseph Sneed, what would that entail for that those people to form their own utility district?
Is there a city doing that now?
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, two things. There is a process at the state level through the PUC to develop what they are called allocated service territories, and within those service territories, you are mandated to provide service. That this area that of South Bank is not allocated to Cascade Locks under that structure. Your specific question about formation, the people, one of the fundamental rights of the people across the nation here in Oregon is that folks may, if they are dissatisfied with the service that they're getting or they're not getting any service, they can form their own either municipal electric utility, a people's utility district, or a rural electric cooperative. The methods of formation are all a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
It is very tough. One, you have to have people who are really upset with their service. There is a formation in the city of Hermiston at the moment where they're talking about forming a municipal utility and buying out PacifiCorp in that area. It's not an easy thing to do. The last municipal utility was formed in the 1950s, the Springfield Utility Board. Most of our members go back to serving around the turn of the century in the 1890s, but it is the people have that fundamental right to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Worth.
Quick question. I guess I'm not understanding why you can't simply appoint a board separate from the city council. Because it sounds like the city council is now acting as the board of the municipal utility district. Why not just have a separate board and have them be the board instead of having the city council serve as city council as well as the board of this district?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, it's the most of the small municipal utilities, the city council serves as the utility board, and I don't know that they use a gavel any different way. It's just that the city council governs the municipal utility the same way they do water service, sewer service, or anything else. And I guess I would point out that there are many cities in the state that provide sewer and water service outside the city limits, and many of those at different rates, but also as a municipal service. The larger municipal utilities do have a directly elected board, in the case of Springfield and Eugene Water and Electric Board. But specifically to your question, that has historically been a matter of the city charter, not the state statutes. The design under which people can form their municipal utility or PUD or municipal utility is established as part of the city charter.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to ask Bob Montgomery, Dave Barenberg, and Mark Nelson to all come up together, please. And the briefer, the better. I mean, that would be a hell of a big city.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have a very busy schedule. I'll be very brief. I'm here. My name is Bob Montgomery from Cascade Locks. I'm here representing myself and other citizens of Cascade Locks. This is a tough one, having followed two senior members and a mother superior, but I'm going to go ahead and oppose this, House Bill 3481. Very briefly, I've represented this area for 6 years, and I don't remember anybody contacting me prior to the tail end of my job as a state legislator about this issue. The citizens of Cascade Locks own this system. There are 11 other cities in the state that have the same situation that we do. We offer the service outside the city. You've heard all the technical things from the technocrats. Years ago, no one wanted us, so we set up our own system. And we decided to take in some other people, and now you see what's happening. It costs more to serve these people outside, and you've heard the stories of the gorge with trees falling down on the lines running back and forth, and it's 15 to 20 miles down through a bunch of trees that they have to maintain all the time. And with the Columbia Gorge Commission now, it's more difficult to do things in the Columbia Gorge, justifiably so, I guess. They put a bike path in. We had to move our poles, and you can't believe the red tape our city's having to go through to move the poles because they wanted to put a bike path in. Most of the people in rural Oregon know it costs more to live in rural Oregon, but the people in the big cities, I lived in West Salem for 8 years, and I lived out of the city limits. My sewer rate was double what the people in town paid, and I knew that. I accepted that. So it's not something that's unique. Most cities in the state, Portland included, charge more for their water and sewer system if you live outside the city. That's your choice you make. I ask you to not consider this bill any further, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Dave Barron, representing League Oregon Cities, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you, and I, too, will be brief. It's sometimes said that in public service, no good deed goes unpunished, and in terms of this legislation, I think, or this circumstance, as the previous witnesses have spoken, that the city did not ask to provide the services in the first place, was doing so to try to meet a need that was there. There is a process that does have involvement of citizens from the area that service was extended to. It seems to me that this is an issue that's one best dealt with in a local level by the local decision-making authority to try to arrive at a local solution to a problem that's specific to a limited area. And with that, I would also ask you to not consider this bill further. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Nelson, Public Affairs Counsel, representing Eugene Water Electric Board. This bill, as presented to you today, is a very simple bill. We would maintain, however, as you are beginning to find out, it's a very complex issue. It has, I think, some very major unintended consequences. I understand the nature of the problem and the nature of the solution, proposed solution, but I think it causes major problems throughout the state. The language assumes that we at Eugene Water Electric Board charge on the basis of location. This is not true. We charge on the basis of the cost of service, the rate, not on the cost of service rate, and not on location. Let me give you an example. Warehouser located in the city of Eugene, located outside the city of Eugene, we serve, and because of their size and the nature of their load, they pay a lower rate than, say, Sacred Heart hospital that's inside the city of Eugene. This is because Weyerhaeuser has what's called an even load. They don't have a lot of peaks, and they operate off-peak when the power is cheaper. Under this bill, we would be required to lower Sacred Heart's rate to match Weyerhaeuser, or conversely increase Weyerhaeuser's rates to be the same as Sacred Heart. And I want to point out that the bill does not distinguish between residential, commercial, and industrial rates. It just speaks to customers. And as Representative Leonard, I think, accurately has portrayed, he is speaking to residential rates. But I think the bill, again, has unintended consequences and is much broader in its application to other units besides residential holders. Finally, EWEB is also a power marketer, and we sell power to California, among other places in the Pacific Northwest. This bill appears to require us to sell our power to California at the same rate as we have to sell to our customers in Eugene. And again, this is why I spoke to unintended consequences. Clearly, this is not the intention of the proponents of the bill, but it does have that kind of impact. So we would, you've heard other reasons besides my unintended consequences to oppose the bill, and I think those are also quite good. I think you're stepping into, this bill steps into an area which, again, is very, very complex, and the Eugene Water Electric Board would like you to oppose the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on House Bill 3481? Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3481. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2660. And Matt, give us a quick rundown on this while Pam's bringing that up, please.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2660 defines fees adopted by ordinance or regulation for administration and enforcement of specialty code or codes for which municipality has assumed responsibility as reasonable if the fee is substantially similar to fees charged by other municipalities in the same geographic area or region. I might also add that I had submitted a request to Legislative Council for the -3 amendments. I've since been informed that the earlier interest in those is not there anymore, so that should be discarded, and they actually have not returned from Legislative Council yet anyway. So.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Let's Burton, why don't you go ahead and come on up? And Fred? And Joe, were you coming? Was Joe supposed to come up with you also?
Oh, you guys, why don't you go? We'll just sit here.
You're filling in for Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Landry?
No, Mr. Chair, if we may,
I'm just trying to go off my list
right
here that shows.
Apologize. The State Building Codes Division asked to make some comments, if that's
okay.
Agreeable to the chair.
Okay, all right. And I'm going to ask you all to keep your comments as brief as you can, because we need to make sure that we get through our agenda before 10:30. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joan Fraser. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Building Codes Division, which is a division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Joe Brewer would have been here today, but he is testifying before Ways and Means on our budget currently, so he sends his regrets. As you're probably aware, the Building Codes Division adopts, administers, and enforces Oregon statewide building codes. Local jurisdictions can assume responsibility for administering and enforcing these building codes, and as part of that process, they adopt fees through local ordinances. The division has the authority, if there is an appeal of those fees, to hold a hearing and determine whether the fees are reasonable and necessary. There is no real standard, no direction as to what constitutes reasonable and necessary for these fees. And this bill, I think the intent of this bill is to provide the division with some clarification, both for the complainants and the respondents, so that there's a more predictable outcome of the appeal process. We got a chance to look at the amendments, the -2 amendments, and we support the concept. Anything that can bring us closer to clarifying reasonable and necessary, we would support that in concept. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Burton Wiest. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors. To be brief, this bill has the support of just about everybody involved in the code process, certainly from the side of the folks who pay for the permits, and I'm also pleased to say, and they'll testify, that we have worked with building officials on the -2 amendments, which are also acceptable to them. What this bill very quickly is, if you look at the first page of the bill, House Bill 2660, you'll find starting on line 19 a process, as Joan mentioned, that provides 10 or more persons or an association representing 10 or more persons may appeal a fee adopted by a local government. And the test that the state has to apply is whether the fee is necessary and reasonable, which is found on line 24. There's no guidance in the statute whatsoever about what reasonable and necessary mean. Necessary has been a little bit easier to deal with because you can show evidence. You can show here are our costs, here are our personnel costs, here are our rent, here are those fees that the local government has to pay. Reasonable has been a little tougher. Traditionally, without any statutory direction, reasonable has generally meant what are other jurisdictions charging? What's the marketplace, so to speak, for fees, and that has been the test of reasonable. But however, the decisions of dealing with the word reasonable have kind of varied over the years, and the attempt of this bill is to simply get some definition of what reasonable is. The -2 amendments, or the amendments we worked on with a whole group of people, including the department or the division, building officials, and others, and what the -2 amendments say is they substitute the entire new portion of the bill on page 2. It says for the purposes of that appeal by 10 or more parties or an association, the director shall consider the following when making his decision on reasonableness. First, that the fee is the same amount or closely approximate the amount of fees of other jurisdictions similar size and geographic location. B, is the fee is calculated with the same or similar method, in other words, so we're not comparing apples and oranges. And also for the same service, so we're making sure we're comparing municipalities that offer the same service. And C, is the fee is of the same type of fee, so that we're, again, making sure we're comparing apples and apples. I would point out that this is consider. It does not mandate the director to make his decision solely on this, but it would at least provide some direction about what the policy of the state is when we're talking about reasonable fees. And that's really the bill. And as I mentioned, the bill has the support, I've been authorized to say, of Associated Building Contractors, Independent Electrical Contractors, the home builders are here, Local 290 is here, Local 48, NECA, others have all worked on this bill, and we think it is a reasonable bill and urge you to pass it out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
I am Fred Venata, appearing before you on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association to express our support for this amendment. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I forgot to mention we passed out to you the last 2 years' worth of fee increases that were submitted by local governments. Also, you'll find the questionnaire the building department or building division currently uses in asking people to review their fees. You'll also find the letters that are submitted by the various folks that turn in your fees, turn in their fees. For the record, I would ask that you note that the jurisdictions with asterisks are provided by private inspection companies, not public agencies. To be real honest with the committee, one of the things we want the division to look at is why are the fee increases in Sisters the same as they are in Lebanon, or same as they are in Veneta, same as they are in other areas? We think that it's reasonable to obviously to have fee increases, but we think that there ought to be some examination of the fees to make sure they're relative to local costs.
Okay, thank you, Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Weiss. This information is practically worthless in terms of what you're asking for, because there's no way to compare, based on the information you're providing here, what the fees are. In the future, it would be helpful to actually put the fee down rather than some sort of percentage increase. I mean, they might have been way under, and they increased 200%, and they're still under the average. So in the future, I'd appreciate
Mr. Chair, Representative March, if you look in the back of the packet, there is actual fees.
All of them?
You go back, it's the majority of them, yes. The ones that were all submitted by the private departments that are the same in every jurisdiction.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Joe Landry. Bill, can you and Kevin want to go ahead and come on up? And you don't mind, do you?
No, I don't. Okay.
Yeah. You guys won't punch each other or anything?
No, not like that.
Go ahead.
Chair, Carmel, members of the committee, my name is